But the reality is that I've hardly even lived. They tell me to take care of my youth and explore its wonders, but all I wonder is how growing old would feel. How reality begins to strike, feeling so surreal. The missiles start striking, asking if this is real, if the state beneath my feet is Israel. You see everything that I see, yet turn around and forget all about me. You walk on 2 feet and speak in human, but don't even know what that means. Sure, I've hardly lived and you did, but at least when I die, I still walk from Adam's rib. Maybe the fountain of youth is the only taste they'll ever know. But what is youth when you've stripped us on borders, when you've stamped on us numbers, when you've peeled back our faces, when you've hit us with racists, when you've painted over apartheid while saying you're tongue-tied with white lies. Yet you still walk on our inside, saying you want peace, as if peace comes from war. Drink, my child, drink until you are full, because the roundness of the moon will only stand so still, glistening over your corpse as it rots in the new sun's flames. But all you wished for was a shroud for your own remains. But what remains is our Jerusalem, our Aqsa, our hope, and our Palestine. Thank you.
Thank you to Sister Abir Safa for that very powerful, moving poem, and read in a very passionate way. I would now like to move on to ask Father Frank Gehly to come up to the stage. Father Frank Gehly is no stranger to many of you. He is an Anglican priest and activist. He has degrees in philosophy, Christian ethics, Islamic studies, a teacher training qualification in religious education, and an Oxford certificate in theology. He's an activist for justice, and regularly on his blog are an array of socio-political and religious issues. Without further ado, I'd like to ask Father Frank Gehly to come up to take the stage.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wobbling elements symbolizing a tottering Zionist outfit.
Inshallah.
Inshallah. So I want to take you briefly from darkness into light. I'm going to start with the darkness of a moronic doctrine called Christian Zionism. It is a fraud, a monstrosity, a nonsense fit not for human beings but for beasts. It is an irrational, contradictory doctrine. It's like a round square or a four-sided triangle. It's a perversion, a mindless idiocy, a harmful one. A key figure in this doctrine was a man called John Nelson Darby, who lived a couple of centuries back. He was an Irish Anglican clergyman, but later on he became Sir Plymouth Dovlin, Plymouth Brethren, a sect which is rejects tradition, even reason. And so this man Darby joined this sect and ended up deceiving even people more ignorant and stupid than himself. He invoked one passage in the New Testament, the second letter of St. Paul to Timothy, and he claimed that on that passage, history, God had divided history into dispensations. And as a matter of fact, if you look at that passage, there is nothing to do with dispensations. But for this lunatic, for this John Darby, the final epoch, the final dispensation, was crowned by Christ's second coming, which is a perfect author of Christian belief. But he combined it with the notion of a millennium. Now, his notion is utterly misleading. It rests again on a complete misinterpretation of the book of Revelation. Saint Augustine long ago dismissed this fable of the millennium. And there is a fight between Christ and Satan, but the fight is spiritual, and it's fought by Christ and fought in the church every day. Anyway, Revelation says nothing at all about the Jewish people having to return to the land of Israel, as the Christian Zionists claim. So I'm happy to say that Christian Zionism is false. It's a heresy and a perversion of Christianity, incidentally. And here I want to make clear, I do respect Judaism, the integrity of Judaism, and I'm delighted of the rabbinical presence here. Many years ago I had the pleasure, the honor of sharing a platform with Rabbi Aaron Cohen on Iran TV, and I always thought what a wonderful man he is. He's always really my man. However, I'm staking the Christian position. And the Christian position set out by St. Paul in Galatians is that the church is the Israel of God. So if you want to read the letter to the Romans from chapters 9 to 11, you will find the perfect setting out of a Christian position. So Paul was a zealous Jew, and he said, has God rejected his people? By no means. So Israel will be saved. And amen to that. Now, you know how one of the aims of this moronic doctrine of Christian Zionism is the rebuilding of a temple of Jerusalem. Now, again, destroyed by my ancestors, the Romans. I was born in Rome, so I'm a Roman. Not a Roman Catholic, but a Roman Anglican. And they claim that to rebuild the temple would be necessary for the second coming of Christ. Now, again, Jesus Christ said, I am the new temple. And even New Jerusalem, which is the final book of the Bible, the New Testament, the book of Revelation, there is no temple in the New Jerusalem. It is necessary because the blessed will be worshipping God face to face. There was a conference, Christian Zionist so-called conference in Jerusalem in 2001, but they urge Jews worldwide to continue to return to Israel, to the Holy Land, and to encourage Israel to resist terrorism and the sword of Islam. The sword of Islam. So you see where these people come from. And of course they raise the old bogey of anti-Semitism, which is used as a stick with which to beat opponents. So I want to say, Christian Zionism is wrong on four grounds. Justice, because it rides roughshod over the rights of native peoples, the Palestinians. Exegetically, because based on a false interpretation of the biblical text. It's only to its imbalanced attitude towards Islam and Judaism, it endangers religious dialogue, which is so important for us today. And because of its extremes, Christian Zionism threatens peace in the Middle East. So Jerusalem should be a bond, a common ground between the three universal faiths. Jerusalem should not be a bone of contention and strife, but a shared symbol of peace, tolerance and friendship. So it is in that spirit that the Vatican, which after all represents a good chunk of Christianity, proposed after the Second World War, that Jerusalem should be run by a corpus separatum, a separate body or unit. Because of the extraordinary importance of the holy place, Jerusalem should be under the jurisdiction of the United Nations, international arms. So, and this resolution was passed. Of course, the Zionists rejected it. And we know all about President Trump, who disastrously blundered by moving the embassy to Jerusalem, and he will pay bitterly for that. So I've gone from darkness to a kind of light, but now I want to show the most glorious light. I want to talk to you briefly about an indomitable fighter for Palestine, a Christian archbishop. His name was Hilario Capucci, and he was indeed Archbishop, Melkite Archbishop. Melkites are a particular Christian denomination in communion with the Catholic Church or Jerusalem. He was an indomitable fighter for Palestine. He was born in Aleppo, Syria. In August 1974, Monsignor Capucci was arrested by the Israelis on the charge of arms smuggling. The police claimed to have discovered in his car a large cache of guns, grenades, and other weapons, and explosives meant for Palestinian resistance. Terrible, isn't it? Well, Capucci said this is an Israeli plot, but it went on several hunger strikes. In prison, he was tortured. He was cruelly treated by Israelis, and Palestinian fighters carried out several actions, public actions, demanding his release. So it caused great, the episode caused great controversy because Capucci's ecclesiastical status. After 4 years of imprisonment, the Vatican managed to pressurize the Israelis to have him released, and the Israelis claimed we will not have this man again in the Middle East. But after a short interlude, he was turned up again in Damascus and in a gathering of PLO leaders. And Yasser Arafat, the great iconic symbol of Palestinian resistance, considered Capucci as a personal friend, as a fighter for Palestine, and Capucci in public wore kefir, the special headdress symbolized in a way the Palestinian cause. And later on, Capucci also visited Tehran, and our photographs show him next to Ayatollah Khomeini. Good age, wasn't it? And in old age, he died last year, in his 80s. But old age did not diminish his righteous sense of commitment. He participated, visited Iraq when it was under siege, Baghdad under siege by sanctions, obtained release from some hostages. And in 2010, at the age of 88, he embarked on the ship Navi Marmara, Turkish ship, which was trying to breach the Gaza blockade to bring relief to the people of Gaza. And he was arrested. You know, Navi Marmara was attacked by Israelis. Many innocent people were killed. Capucci was arrested and was taken in prison to Israel. He declared, "The cross is my defense, defiant." He never gave up hope for his battle's final victory. He would often take his leave from the visitors, saying, "I wish we should meet again in Jerusalem, Al-Quds, the capital of free Palestine." Pope John Paul II lobbied Israelis so he could be allowed at least to see again his beloved Jerusalem before he died, but the Israeli turned it down. Anyways, Capucci said, "The Zionists were not able to exclude me from the heavenly Jerusalem. God is the only authority to have jurisdiction there, not the Zionists." In 2013, Mahmoud Abbas, Palestinian leader, bestowed on Capucci the highest Palestinian decoration. Even Hamas hailed him as a great Arab revolutionary and a stalwart friend and champion of Palestine. Hezbollah, the Shia Lebanese militant group, also offered condolences when Capucci died last year. He said, Hezbollah said, the Arab nation, Muslim nation, I should say, but remember what Roshan correctly pointed out, the universe, of course, it's lost a great defender. And, of course, Hassan Nasrallah also said that Capucci had always worked to liberate the holy places, obliterate the Zionist occupation, and unite all people supporting the Palestinian cause. So, I conclude here. I've taken you from darkness, from middle stage, the official Christian position, which is realistic, not ideal, but Jerusalem should be internationalized. It is not ideal, but it offers some kind of medium ground. And then, like this great fighter, this hero of fighter for Palestine. Incidentally, at least five countries, Iraq, Egypt, Libya, Sudan, and Syria, have issued stamps in honor of Capuchis. But of course, the highest and eternal reward will be in heaven. So I conclude, all hail to the spirit of Hilario Capucci. Long live Jerusalem al-Quds. Long live Palestine. Al-Intisar il-Intifada.
I'd like to thank Father Frangeli for actually providing us this information on Hilario Capucci and the kind of things that he's done, and we need to remember those struggles from whatever background people come from. And it's something that's quite reflective in a sense, that we've got a wide spectrum of people from different faith groups, no faith groups, actually coming to talk about the broader cause of Palestine. I would now like to invite Sandra Wetfer to actually come up to speak. She's a long-time activist for Palestinian rights. She's, many of you would have seen her speaking on Quds Day. Those of you that have gone outside Hewlett-Packard and outside G4S actually campaigning against the kind of things that have been going on, you'd see her standing and searching the photographs and talking about some of those issues and campaigning on the ground at grassroots level to try and make a difference. So without further ado, Sandra, I'd like to invite you on.
I'd like to thank the organizers for putting up this wonderful event and for asking me to speak. Just one little confession. I've written up enough notes to last 20 minutes, and then I've shaved and shaved and shaved. I'm going to speed read into this, and I wish you all the best in following my gist. I make no distinction between the future of Jerusalem and that of the West Bank, or Gaza, or Haifa, or Yaffa, or Acre, etc. It is all Palestine. What is taking place in terms of the ethnic cleansing of Palestine is a mere continuation of the Nakba, a conveyor belt of war crimes snaking around the obsolete Oslo legacy, the accords of which have proved to be nothing short of the formaldehyde keeping the status quo. With America's peace brokering image shattered to smithereens and the Zionization of some Arab countries such as Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Jordan and Egypt, our assistance and support must then come through international law, and the EU is very well placed to impose and implement this. Since Trump's decision to move the embassy to Jerusalem, settlement building has taken on unprecedented speed. Those concrete blocks are rising at even more dizzying, head-spinning rate of knots, while all and sundry sit twiddling their thumbs. With that wanton act of idiocy, Israel was given a carte blanche to do exactly as it pleases. The mask has fallen. That's the only thing we can thank Trump for. We now know the beast we are dealing with, and that beast should have absolutely nothing to do with the process that will lead to our liberation. So we turn to the European Union for support and solidarity in liberating ourselves. On that basis, I shall hereby refer to it as the middleman. But before we can do that, the middleman needs to fulfill certain criteria. He has to stop trading with the occupying force, cut the countless lucrative trade deals, especially the arms trade, that facilitates our strangulation and occupation. The middleman has to stop paper shuffling by using words like slammed, criticized, disapproved of, in reference to Israel's plethora of crimes. Take, for example, the UN-funded and constructed schools, which Israel not so long ago decided to demolish. Israel didn't even get so much as a slap on the wrist when it should have had sanctions slapped on its very head. The middleman has to stop talking about the Swiss cheese scenario when they refer to the two-state idea. To even suggest these Bantustans are good enough for us is well beneath contempt. And should that middleman carry on promoting and flogging that dead horse, It is his full responsibility and duty to demonstrate exactly how that model is to materialize. That should set the cat among the pigeons. The two-state delusion is nothing short of Nakba denial. And when you think that Holocaust denial is illegal in some countries, and Nakba denial is de rigueur, I don't think so. Without acknowledging our tragedy, no healing can ever take place. The middleman needs to immediately stop the visa waiver program for settlers that emerge out of those illegal settlements. Settlements have been deemed illegal, yet the squatters that inhabit them can travel to Europe unencumbered, unfettered, visas waived, when Palestinians cannot themselves be allowed to return back home. The list goes on. And before we can regard the European Union as a friend, it needs to prove to us Palestinians that it is worthy of being regarded as such. Israel has made sure that the PA is thoroughly corrupted and acts as its right-hand man. It's worth noting that the PA is a total product of Oslo, and as such needs to be totally dismantled and nullified. It is today's equivalent of capos, self-interested quislings, gophers that carry out Israel's criminal bidding and acts against the well-being of its own people. We are not children of a lesser God. Enough labeling us as terrorists. Like every other people on earth, we have the fully fledged God-given right to defend ourselves and resist. The resistance in World War II was hailed as heroic. Where are the Allies now? We have learned, specifically from the Lebanese resistance, that Israel does not cede one single inch without the resistance. So the resistance and its tools are non-negotiable. Yes, even for us, the resistance and its tools are above party politics. They will never be relinquished. The old adage once more resounds loud and clear. No power on earth can douse the flame of the human spirit. As long as there is suppression, there will always be people ready to die on their feet rather than live on their knees. Now, we've been discussing land theft, and however egregious this activity is, there is one aspect of the occupation which is even more unethical and inhuman that needs a special mention, and that is the arrest and detention of Palestinian children. You do not have to be a parent to share this view. You merely have to have a heart that actually beats. Every single family is affected with their loved ones disappearing in Israeli hellholes. 7,000 prisoners, including 359 children, caged. It is the only country in the world that systematically arrests and detains between 500 and 700 people, children, every year, some as young as 10 years old. Although figures for adult imprisonment have reached a plateau at the moment, the kidnapping, detention and incarceration of our children has more than doubled in recent times. It carries out these arrests under cover of darkness, in the early hours of dawn, when the family is at its weakest, separating the child from his or her parent, cuffing the hands in plastic ties that cut through the skin, blindfolding them before throwing them in the back of a jeep, to whisk them off deep inside Israeli territory, which is in contravention of Article 76 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. That child sees no parent, no lawyer, no mother come of justice. 3 out of children are tortured. 40% of children are sexually abused by the IOF. All this to force them to confess to trumped up charges of stone throwing, which can carry a sentence of up to 20 years. Even the confessions are written in Hebrew, a language that is foreign to our children. Leaving the EU aside for a minute, I'd like to highlight this here country's shameful Balfourian stance and its role in creating and maintaining this grave injustice, which spelled the dispossession of 30 million Palestinian refugees. Britain, and if I may stress, not so great Britain, is the author of our tragedy. Countless representatives and MPs from this country have visited the occupied territories over the years, and yes, they have claimed to be stunned, shocked, bewildered and appalled at the unfathomable rate of crimes perpetrated against my people. And yet, When all this indignation gets started about our PR purposes, it is with a singularly hypocritical attitude that Britain resumes being Israel's friend, chanting mantra-like that Israel has a right to defend itself, even as it carries out its regular lawn mowing every few years, a euphemism for pulverizing Gaza to kingdom come. Endless representations are made in Parliament, something I refer to as paper shuffling. We have seen through Al Jazeera's expose, the lobby, how Zionized the British Parliament is. Up to date, absolutely nothing has been done to condemn this. The matter was deemed closed, both by Theresa May and Boris Johnson. Shame on this government and all who support it. Mere barbarians in several row suits that bow and scrape and fawn at Israel's feet. Shame on this government for failing to undo its war crime of gifting my country to another people. For a war crime it was, is, and will carry on being until Britain sees the light and decides to finally join us on the right side of history. Enough pussyfooting around. While the BDS movement is thankfully growing exponentially, it is high time that the European Union takes its gloves off and imposes sanctions on that pariah state in no uncertain terms. That is the only thing that's going to make Israel sit up and take notice. Although Palestine lacks leadership, it has been amply proven that it garners people's support around the world. It is at once heartening and dispiriting that when an offensive like the last one, Protective Edge, takes place, hundreds and thousands take to the street in protest. Once Palestine recedes from the headlines, however, it is totally tragic beyond measure that people mindlessly drop back in their comatose state of apathy. For any real shift to take place, people need to commit their solidarity as a way of life, not just as a seasonal activity. As to our own remit, it is time to own and reclaim our narrative, make it perfectly clear that we are here. What we are after is liberation, not another half-baked peace process. And due to more freedom of movement, is it up to the Palestinians in the diaspora to mobilize, organize, and implement our God-given right to sovereignty and a life of freedom and dignity. One democratic state, one man, one vote, right of return, compensation and restitution is the order of the day. No one under the sun can argue with this. It is extremely simple. Three syllables. Equal rights. Thank you.
Free Palestine!
Sandra, for a very powerful speech in which she's clearly laid out the blueprint of a solution that can actually be made, work towards, and also the remit of what people as individuals and as communities need to actually do. There is a lot that needs to be done. So I'd like to thank Sandra, who's a member of the Innovative Minds organization, for speaking here today. I would also like to mention at this point that the point that was made earlier about sanctions and boycott and issues with it, Sandra was very clear on this issue. And I would like to add that from the Islamic Human Rights Commission's perspective, it's something that we've been engaged in for quite some time, boycotting the companies that support Israeli goods, the card that I showed you earlier that is included in your pack. And I want to add here that a few years back, we received a letter from a company, a multi-million pound company, asking us to remove their name from that boycott list. And that company was Marks and Spencer's. Right? They asked an organization like us, Islamic Human Rights Commission, we like to do a lot, but in actual fact, we're a small organization, compared to a multi-million pound company that exists. Why, if sanctions don't work, if people really are thinking and arguing for that, why would a company like that send an organization like us to a letter saying that this should not, please remove our name from your boycott list. You know, we don't actually do what you've accused us of doing, doing that kind of stuff. So I think we need to really think about the responsibility that each one of us actually has, to echo what Sandra has said. Each one of us has that something that we can practically do simply by the power of what we do as individuals in our own homes or in our different types of communities that we actually exist in, that we are a part of. Now, I would like to ask Rabbi Aaron Cohen, who has come down from Manchester, all the way from there, regular, from New Tricarta, and Jews United Against Zionism. His activism against the festering sword that is Israel has made him the victim of harassment and threats, physical threats that have actually been made, physical attacks that have actually been made against his own home in Manchester and so on by the Zionists. So when we talk about anti-Semitism, Zionists are the people that are promoting and actually carrying out anti-Semitism. And he's had his car doused with petrol and torched. Without further ado, I would like to ask Rabbi Aaron Cohen, who's worked with IHRC for many a year, to come to the stage and present his thoughts. Thank you.
Good afternoon. First of all, I pray to the Almighty that my words this afternoon should be true in their content and their conclusion. We know whatever we say and do is dependent on the wishes of the Almighty. I'd like to thank, first of all, the Islamic Human Rights Commission for making this very important event and for giving me the opportunity of speaking to you today. It's a great privilege. What I want to talk to you about today is giving you the viewpoint of Orthodox, authentic Orthodox Judaism. I was sent an email setting out the headings of the various themes you want to address yourselves at. And I want to speak about the Orthodox Jewish perspective regarding these things. I must stress that we are not in the Tricarta. Our group is known as the Tricarta, which is the name of given historically to those Orthodox Jews who totally oppose Zionism and spread the message that Zionism and Judaism are totally incompatible concepts, much against the understanding of many people in the world, including sadly many Jews who conflate Zionism and Judaism, but in fact they are two totally incompatible concepts. And the work of the Tricarta is to spread the message that Judaism and Zionism are not one. But what I wanted to mention was that we are not politicians. The various themes that we've been asked to give an opinion on, I can give a personal opinion, but these are not necessarily, from a practical point of view, the task of Orthodox Judaism. The task of Orthodox Judaism is to show our perspective and to pray to the Almighty. That's our approach. Pray to the Almighty that the various areas of activity carried out by whoever does them should be successful. The first theme that a list that was sent to me was the question of the identity of Al-Quds, Jerusalem. Jerusalem is a holy city. It's known in around the world as a holy city. And from Jewish Orthodox point of view, it is, of course, a holy city. And we recognize that many other groups around the world treat it also as a holy city. Now, the question of whether it should belong to any particular group, what I have to say is this, that Orthodox Judaism makes no claim whatsoever to political ownership of any part of Palestine. This is our teaching, this is our belief. Our belief is that Jewish people have to live in peace in the countries in which they find themselves, including Palestine, and use the importance of Palestine for their lives and for their religious purposes, but not to be political controllers. So, looking at Jerusalem, our approach is that we wish to be able to carry out our lives, those who live in Palestine, carry out our religious lives around the country, and of course including in Jerusalem, but not as political masters. One of our great rabbis many years ago, going back, that was back in 1929, when there was, as Reza mentioned, this is a festival in Saul that's been going on for many years, 100 years now, and at that time the Zionists wanted to lay claim to the what is known as the Western Wall, very similar to now, how they want to lay claim to the Temple Mount. And the rabbi of Jerusalem at that time was a very big rabbi, Rabbi Sonnenfeld, and he said we should remember that Jerusalem, and he particularly mentioned the Temple Mount, is under the control of the Palestinian people, and that's how it has to be. We would like to have the privilege of access to it, but it is under the control of the Palestinian people. The question of Mr. Trump's move of wish to move the United States embassy to the so-called State of Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Our approach is that it is he may have good intention. He may think he's helping Jews, but of course he's making the mistake. If he does think he's helping Jews, he's making the mistake which most people in the world make, and they were by conflating Zionism and Judaism, and he thinks that by helping Zionism he's helping the Jews, but he's obviously not doing so. And his wish to move the embassy to Jerusalem is, I would say, if I may say, is both stupid and from our point of view irrelevant. It's stupid because it obviously adds fuel to the fire of the confrontation that's taking place in the Palestinian conflict. And this must be obvious to everyone, and is obvious to everyone around the world. But apart from that, from our point of view, it's totally irrelevant, because the United States has no more right to have an embassy for the so-called State of Israel in Jerusalem than they have in Tel Aviv. There should be no, our approach is that the whole concept of a state of, well, that State of Israel is illegitimate and should not exist, and therefore, if there should be no State of Israel, there should be no United States embassy for the so-called State of Israel, whether in Tel Aviv, or in Jerusalem. The question is, of what should be the eventual state, the eventual situation regarding Jerusalem. When we talk about the one state solution, which I'll come to shortly, we as religious people would have no particular preference to whether Jerusalem should be under international control or under total Palestinian control, whichever is felt best by the indigenous population of Palestine, who are the Palestinians, if they once they achieve their control, if they wish that Jerusalem should have should be under international supervision, that's fine as far as we're concerned. If it should be under Palestinian control, that's also fine. Our prayer, of course, is that we should be able to have access to it, but we don't seek control. That situation regarding Jerusalem at the moment is only a distant possibility, but we hope, of course, that it will come in the future. The next item, which theme which we were asked to look at, was the question of the Balfour Declaration. It is mind-boggling to see how so many Western politicians, particularly in the UK, totally ignore the realities of history. One of the previous speakers mentioned the UK Parliament, the British Parliament. Members of Parliament, so many of them, pontificate about the wrongs being done to the state of Israel and the fact that they are being attacked by so-called terrorists and not allowed to live a peaceful life. But they forget that the whole state of Israel was begat out of a wrong activity. The whole Balfour Declaration, if one reads the history of the situation at the time that it was declared, it was an imperialistic political activity in order to achieve the United Kingdom's imperialistic aims at that time. It was clothed in the disguise of helping the Jewish people. But in any case, even if it was really intended, even if it was really intended to help the Jewish people, how could that be correct on the against the interests of the indigenous population and depriving the indigenous population of their possibility of self-determination? And making this Balfour Declaration, they set the scene for constant strife and bloodshed, and that has been what has been happening for the last 100 years. So, how can one be pleased, how can one be proud of the Balfour Declaration when one hears a Prime Minister saying we are proud of our hand in setting up the only democracy in the Middle East? Well, we all know how ludicrous that is, and as previous speakers have mentioned, the fact that there's no way in which the state of Israel is a democratic entity. The members of parliament talk about the violence, whether actual or... They talk about the members of parliament, talk about the violence that are actual or threatened by various parties, various sections of the Palestinian people or pro-Palestinian people. No one wishes to condone violence, but it is impossible to eradicate it unless one goes back to the root cause, which is the illegitimate concept of the state of Israel. And if you want to eradicate violence, you have to go back to the root cause. One cannot, one of the themes was talking about the demonization of Palestinian activism, one cannot demonize, criticize, or eliminate activism without addressing the root cause. Now, our prayer as Orthodox Jews is for the total peaceful, I say peaceful, dissolution of the so-called State of Israel. And that brings us to the next theme, which is the theme of boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Again, this is a personal opinion. We are, as religious people, stand aside. We pray that the right thing should take place. But one of the ways in which the State of Israel could be brought to its knees is certainly on the face of it by the BDS movement, boycott, divestment, sanctions, as happened in South Africa. As we all know, that was brought to its knees entirely in a comparatively peaceful way by similar sort of activity. And finally, hopefully achieving that situation where the state of Israel is brought totally and peacefully to an end and dismantled, our prayer is that it should be replaced by a regime which is entirely in accordance with the aspirations of the Palestinian people, which brings us to the last thing, the question of one state solution. Of course, there are many challenges in the one-state situation, how various things would be, various problems would be dealt with. The main problem would be the question of return of refugees and compensation for the refugees, but it's not an insoluble problem. And with the help of the international community, the one-state solution could be the way forward, in which everybody, whether Palestinian, Jew, or any other grouping, would be able to live peacefully in Palestine. And that is our prayer, that time should arrive when we'd all be able to live peacefully in Palestine, as has been historically the case, that Jew and Muslim and Arab live peacefully together over hundreds of years, both in Palestine and all over the Arab and Muslim world. And that is our prayer, that should take place, and that should lead on to the time when we will all merit the revelation of the glory of the Almighty over the whole world.
Rabbi Aaron Cohen, for stating the position from Orthodox Jewry and what needs to be done in order to bring the State of Israel to an end as soon as possible, inshallah. I would now like to invite George Galloway to come up and speak. There is a long list of things that I could talk about with regards to George, about as to what he's been involved in. Member of Parliament has represented four constituencies and won six separate elections, has been part of the Labour Party, then went on to found the Respect Party, is, I think, most importantly for the purpose of this function, an outspoken activist against Zionism and apartheid Israel, in addition to foreign interventions and wars. So without further ado, George.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Distinguished and brave rabbis, I bow my head before the courage and fidelity of your witness that you have borne here and so stoically through many tribulations here and elsewhere. Religious scholars, leaders, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I congratulate the organizers of this outstanding and ecumenical event, which has drawn together people of all faiths and none. And those who have none, I urge you quickly to find it. Because this is a transitory life. I was asked in a flurry of interviews when I came in the door about the abuse and accusation which activists in this cause face in this country at this time. And I pointed out that on the judgment day, we will at least be able to pray that in aid of our application for salvation, we'll be able to say at least that when they lied about us, when they assaulted us, when they torched our cars, in my case, when they hospitalized us, when they traduced us and defamed us, we had the courage to stand firm and stand tall and bear witness to the truth. And this audience here today is bearing witness to the truth, which is at least a plea in mitigation before the Almighty in our application, which all of us will have to make. And whilst on the religious points, I had to laugh as I saw the giant orangutan, Donald Trump, sitting next to Benjamin Netanyahu in Davos, both of them prattling about the biblical and religious paths that had led them here. I wondered if there was any fool anywhere who believed that Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump care a damn about religion. Both of them are hypocrites. Utter hypocrites. Donald Trump will be lucky to be still the President of the United States by the end of this year. Netanyahu will be lucky still to be the Prime Minister, if luck that is, of the apartheid state of Israel. Both of them might be in prison. Both of them might well be in prison by the end of this year. And as they stroked each other's feathers and self-congratulated and congratulated each other, I could feel a revulsion, a bile rising in the throats of all decent people everywhere. The distinguished rabbi was correct in one respect. It's not actually really relevant on the bigger level where the United States has its embassy. The point is, it's an embassy to an illegitimate state that should be no more. Should be no more. But it was incredibly stupid, as the rabbi said, to pour petrol on an already burning battlefield. It was so stupid that no other country in the world recognized their recognition. Even our own, and we do everything that the United States tells us to do. Only two countries in the world supported it. The United States and Israel. And the Marshall Islands. And five other atolls who, by some strange alchemy, have seats in the United Nations. Literally atolls, outcrops of rock, on one of which its only purpose is so that the United States can explode nuclear weapons on it for testing purposes. The representative raised a hand with six fingers in support of Donald Trump's move. It's unbelievably stupid because it can only intensify the conflict which, if we're not careful, will consume Jerusalem and all of its holy places, holy to all three of the great religions. The presence of the distinguished rabbis and the purity of their message underscores the first important point I wish to make here. It is a foul lie to describe us as anti-Semitic. It is nothing less than a calumny to imply the opposition to the apartheid state of Israel has anything to do with animosity or hatred towards Judaism or Jews. As I frequently point out, many Jews are not Zionists. Most Zionists are not Jews. Many Zionists hate Jews. If you think George W. Bush loved Jews, you've never been to his golf club where they don't allow them as members. Many Zionists, fascist organizations, including here in Britain, hate Jews and love Israel. Go figure. Many Jews are not Zionists. Most Zionists are not Jews. Many Zionists hate Jews. We, on the other hand, love Jews. It is our obligation, our religious obligation, to respect and love Jews. And I love these men sitting here as I love my own father, God rest his soul. We hate Zionism, not least because it has led so many of the Jewish people off the path of righteousness and onto the path of gangsterism. The people of Einstein and Epstein became the people of Netanyahu and Lieberman. One of the many crimes of Zionism is to have sucked so many Jewish people into the vortex that allows them to all day. I hope they're being paid for it, because many of them are doing it all day, justifying the incarceration in a cold prison cell and the threat of rape and murder against a 16-year-old girl, Ahed Tamimi, for slapping a soldier. Incidentally, the soldier slapped her first, as the video shows. But she has every legal, never mind moral, every legal right to slap that soldier. That soldier was illegally on her family's property. That soldier and his friends had illegally shot her cousin hours earlier. And the effort that they are putting in on WikiLeaks, Wikipedia rather, dozen scores of amendments to Ahed Tamimi's Wikipedia entry because they know it's not a good look. It's not a good look, this. This young, brave, beautiful girl who since she was a child has been slapping Israeli soldiers. God strengthen her slap and have everyone slap illegal occupiers and oppressors in Palestine and around the world. Ahed Tamimi has shamed the Arab leaders, the 20 stone Arab leaders who need a block and tackle to lift them out of their thrones, to visit their bordellos and their casinos. Ahed Tamimi is the Arab leader. Ahed should be the leader of the Arab world, not the kings and the princes who masquerade as leaders. This brave girl and her family face an uncertain future. She may beat this rap, but there'll be another one along in a minute. She may survive a prison sentence, but there'll be another long one along in a minute. And who knows what criminal, God forbid, will physically harm her or eliminate her. But if they do, they should know that they will not stop her. Dead or alive, Ahed Tamimi is an example of the Arabs and the Muslims risen to new moral heights. It's been a very bad few. I've been in this campaign, this cause, since I was a teenager. And now I'm not. It's quite a long time. I've seen ups and downs. When I first got involved in this cause, you could have fitted all the supporters of the PLO into this hall, all the supporters in all of Britain, and had room for some elephants at the back. Now we are millions, tens of millions. But I never saw a worse few weeks than what I've watched for Israel. Because people's journalism, citizen journalism, mobile telephones are bringing us daily footage of their crimes in occupied Palestine. They cannot stop us. Once upon a time, by the stranglehold of a small number of outlets in the media owned by rich and powerful people who invariably supported Israel, they could choke off the reality of what was happening in occupied Palestine. But now they cannot. As soon as they, I watched a video last night of them arresting a five-year-old boy, 5 years old, a soldier who has to go home to his wife at night, who has to look himself in the mirror in the morning, who tucks his own children into bed with a weapon, was arresting a 5 years old child, throwing him into an iron armored personnel carrier, closing the door and taking him off to God knows what fate. Oh, what a pity, I was just getting started. daily these crimes are being committed, and now they are committed in front of our eyes. So in the moment I have left, what do we do? The first thing we do is we stand firm and we stand tall. Whatever they call us, they're lying. And we'll explain how and why. The second thing we do is that we take a conscious decision, not just for ourselves, to boycott all goods and services emanating, not just from the illegally occupied territories, settlements. They're all settlements. It's all illegally occupied territories.
boycott.
And we refuse to legitimize. We don't get into schoolboy debates with Israeli supporters of apartheid. I was underground, illegally, in apartheid South Africa, working for the African National Congress and for the liberation of the people of South Africa. The very idea that I should go to the Oxford Union and debate with a Boer supporter of apartheid South Africa would have been laughable, risible, insulting. The same is true here, because as the grandson of Nelson Mandela himself said in Palestine last week, apartheid Israel is even worse than apartheid South Africa. Amandla, victory to the Palestinian people.
Speech, and in particular to draw the parallels about how we should be in terms of recognizing the apartheid state of South Africa and Zionist apartheid state of Israel and what needs to be done. I would now like to invite someone who has been an activist, a veteran human rights campaigner since his time in University College Berkeley. During the anti-Vietnam protest movement at that time in the late 1960s. He's done a postgraduate degree from Cambridge in London. He came to the UK in 1971, has been in the voluntary sector for some 15 years, and he has helped to set up the Islamic Human Rights Commission, which has been part of organising this function today. And perhaps the thing that wasn't included in the intro that I was given to this was also something that relates to a comment that was made by Ayatollah Khamenei with regards to people who are managers of jihad. And following that remark that was made, the World Ahlul Bayt Assembly awarded Masoud Shejere, the chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, the award of manager of jihad. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Masoud Shejere to the podium.
Dear brothers and sisters, scholars, George, and our older friends and campaigners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's really wonderful to be here. You know, I look around, we are all family and friends and campaigners. We're struggling together day in, day out. And isn't it wonderful what Mr. Trump did, really, you know, exposed. I couldn't believe it, you know, when it happened. I thought no other fool would have removed the mask the way he removed the mask. The policy of Trump and Obama and all the previous president is really no different whatsoever. It's just the mask has been removed, so we could get on with it now. We have listened to fantastic and wonderful contribution. I think the contribution from Roshan was very important, very important. We should not allow the Zionization of Islamic centers and Muslim community centers. We should not allow the Zionists to infiltrate and actually normalize themselves the way they are doing. And this is not really blaming one center or another. It's actually the policy of infiltration which needs to be aware, and we need to stop it. But also, we are being demonized. Our community, our Palestinian brothers and sisters, and George and others highlighted, are facing demonization and pressure day in, day out. They are going into prison as young as 5 years old. They're suffering as a family and as a community. They're deprived of most basic fundamental rights, even medicine and nourishment. This is happening on a daily basis. And they're being bullied by the Zionists. But also we are being bullied here. Many of those who you saw speaking today, including Ken Livingstone, and I see others in the audience who are actually being demonized and bullied by the Zionists, because what they know is happening very clearly. Overwhelming majority of people in Europe, in Britain, in United States are awakening to the reality of oppression of the Zionists against the Palestinians. So what they can do, and the only thing they can do, through hook and crook, they could come and divert the so-called leaders of our communities from different political parties, the leaders of media, etc., and bullying the activists to so they submit or shut up. But I've got a news for you, Zionists. We are not going to shut up. Actually, if anything, we're going to be speaking much louder. The reality is our brothers in Palestine is struggling against injustice. They're resisting. That is their God-given right. That is the international law-given right to people to resist illegal occupation. That is their right, and it's our duty to support their right. And we will do so. It doesn't matter how many articles you're going to write about us. It doesn't matter how many times you threaten us with a private prosecution. We are going to continue. And I want to say something else now here. Islamic Human Rights Commission will be supporting every single activist who is actually being bullied by the Zionists. We will organize behind them. We will organize the whole community, not just the Muslim community, the Christian community, anti-Zionist Jewish community. We are coming together. We are ready for the fight of standing and supporting Palestinians, no matter what. We are not going to give in. And that's the message. We will organize ourselves. We are going to work together, all of us, and victory will be us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
In this regard, as chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masubhai, which didn't mention, was also the targeting of Quds Day that had been taking place to close it down last year. They were unsuccessful. We've actually been in talks with the police to, then they asked us where we would like to organize Quds Day from and to. So it is something that is going on and continuing behind the scenes. They also tried to ban the flags of the resistance. They tried to make sure that those would not be flown, that how we express that resistance that's being talked about in the poems that have been said today were also tried to be closed down. They failed. They forget that the Quranic verse promises us that the party of God will be victorious. I would like to now move to the final stage, very brief final stage, because we're running out of time of the panel. So if I could ask all the people who spoke in this section of the proceedings, if you could come up to the stage, and we will have take quick questions from the floor. Either write them down, pass them on to us, or there might be a roving mic. Either write your questions down and pass them to one of the volunteers who will be walking around, or there might be a mic given for you to be able to say. So if you can put your hand up so I can see, I've already got one question that's been asked. So I'll start with Les, who's closest to myself, and I'll see three other people in the audience, one, two, three, and we'll take those in that order.
Yes, thank you to the couple speakers who said the mask has dropped. From the mainstream political institutions, they act with horror and embarrassment that President Trump says he will move the embassy to Jerusalem. But from the standpoint of the Palestine Solidarity Movement, we know that this is simply making clearer to all who care to see that the U.S. government has systematically supported the dispossession of the Palestinians through Zionist terror, colonization, and so on, for the last four decades or more. Now, given that the mask has dropped, it becomes more difficult for the Arab regimes, including the Palestine National Authority, to pretend otherwise. So now they've got a problem. This is more a problem for the collaborations than it is for the Palestinians. So I want to ask, how can we make this even more of a problem for the collaborations to help undermine their legitimacy?
Well,
to anyone.
Okay. Anyone? Panel, would you like to take first? Sandra, maybe?
Mobilizing. Somebody earlier on mentioned about keyboard warriors. That's all very good and well, but people do need to get up and go onto the streets and demonstrate, not just as a seasonal lifestyle, but as a regular activity. We need to build the momentum. We need the numbers. So please, just keep doing all of that. Civil disobedience as well.
George, would you like to answer?
Well, it's a very good question, actually, and I omitted, because of time, to make that very point myself. Just this day, some of you may have missed it, in the last few hours, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has declared that Donald Trump's decision on Jerusalem is null and void. It has taken them some weeks to make any comment at all. But they were forced to by the humiliation they endured, as Netanyahu repeatedly stressed at Davos, sitting next to Trump, that Israel and America and your allies in the Arab world are now marching, acting as one. And I knew when he said it that there would be people squirming in Arab capitals. And lo and behold, this was such a humiliation that the Al Saud leaders have made this statement today, and it will be churlish not to welcome it, whilst regretting the length of time that it has taken, and insisting that these not be mere words, but followed by actions. That will be much more difficult, because talking is, of course, much cheaper than acting.
Father Franklin.
I must make a confession. I was, until a certain point, naive enough to believe that Trump might actually have made a difference. Because during the electoral campaign, before his election, addressing the Republican Friends of Israel, he had refused to commit himself to making Jerusalem the capital of Israel because he had said it should be part of a bargain. Because he's supposed to be the master of the art of the deal, and the deal required he do not, you know, concede before the Israel bargain. Now, of course, he has completely gone back on that, and there are various theories why that's happened, the influence of Ivanka and the family connections, I'm not committing. But quite clearly he has blundered disastrously, and he will pay for it.
Sorry, I just want to make another point add to this. It's not just the treachery of the Arab world leaders. We unfortunately have got problem among the activists here and those activist organizations. I think this demonization process has had an impact on some of them. As you know, Labour Party trying to expel Palestinian activists because they're anti-Semitic, and some of them were actually Jews, and one of them was his father was a rabbi, and he's a Jew. And how could a Jewish person be sort of anti-Semitic? Well, this is pathetic. But they're going ahead through with this. And also, even Palestinian Solidarity yesterday actually decided to expel one activist. And this is outrageous. Really, we need to keep our house in order. We need to put pressure and say that no one from the those who are campaigning for justice for Palestine should give in to the bullying of the Zionists. And indeed, we need to hold forth, and we need to be united, and we need to fight this devil for what it is.
Okay, if I could have a question from the floor.
I have a brief correction to make, and the Reverend Kelly said that the Christian Zionist was Irish. I want to point out that he was not Irish. He was a settler that came to Ireland, granted land stolen from the native Irish. So he was not Irish, he was a settler that left Ireland. But my question is for George Galloway. Again, it's about Ireland. In the occupied part of Ireland now, the native Irish have outnumbered the settlers. My question for George is, does he think that the Palestinians will outnumber the settlers?
If I can take a couple more questions, if you don't mind, before I open it to the panellists to answer the questions. There's one of the questions that was asked earlier, and I've got quite a few, and I'll have to stop any more than I've got. I've got three people in my sight who are going to be asking the questions and a few in my hand. I don't think we'll have time, so I apologise to anyone who else wants to ask a question. So while the mic goes towards Nazim, another question that I had received was, why does the House of Parliament avoid the topic of apartheid Palestine? They debate every other topic on the planet. And final question for this round. Final question for this round from Nazim.
One of the slogans the Zionists seem to have a problem with is from the river to the sea. How important is it for us to carry on saying from the river to the sea? Palestine will be free.
Okay, if I can open it to the panelists to answer any of those three questions.
The alternative to from the river to the sea was the Oslo Accords and two-state solution. Which was a roadmap, which turned out to be a dead end, and the part of Palestine, small part, that was intended to be the Palestinian state in the two-state solution is now a car park of Israeli cars, cities, towns, and settlements, and therefore that prospect, if it were ever a going concern, is now clearly dead. So that just leaves a one-state solution where Jews and Christians and Muslims can live as equal citizens under the law, under an agreed constitution, one man, one woman,
one vote. That was what we struggled for in South Africa. And incidentally, the whole of Israel-Palestine is smaller than a single park in South Africa. The Kruger National Park is bigger than the entire territory of Israel-Palestine. That's what we struggled for there, and it's what we should struggle for here. When Mandela was freed from prison, the Boers from the Orange Free State came to ask him for his permission to form a whites-only state in the Orange Free State. It's confusing, I know. A whites-only state in the Orange Free State. And Mandela answered, "We don't believe in white states or black states. We believe only in democratic states where black and white people live as equals under the law, under the agreed constitution." The question, very intelligent one, from the Celtic supporter in the second row. How are we playing today? No, we beat Hibs yesterday. It was the Battle of the Greens yesterday. The point that he made, comparing settlers and native population, was a clever one. The problem is, as it was in the occupied six counties in the northeast of Ireland, that the boundaries have been gerrymandered to try and minimize the possibility of being outnumbered. The same is true in occupied Palestine, because most Palestinians don't live in Israel or Palestine. 1.8 million of them live in what's called Israel. Another 2.5 million or so live in the occupied territories in Gaza. But the remainder of the Palestinian population, which is far, far greater than those numbers, lives outside as refugees and exiles, and some of them are here in this room now. There can be no solution that does not permit the return of all Palestinian refugees to their land and their property. And then we will outnumber them. In the six counties of the northeast of Ireland, occupied still by Britain, by virtue of the fact that we have more children than them, and I have five, the youngest of them there, 9 months, I'm going for six, not out. We, by the grace of God, have many children, and the others do not. Hallelujah.
Answer your question, Nazim. If it irks the Zionists when we chant "from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," it is more important to shout it even louder from the rooftops.
If I can take that gentleman just then, Nazim's row. No?
There's a question.
Okay, sister there.
I just want to...
Sorry, just 1 second. Rabbi Cohen is going to say a couple of words.
There was one question about the Parliament, House of Parliament, not discussing the situation in Palestine. I'd like to dwell on the point I mentioned in my few words and refer to my... Am I allowed to call my good friend George Gallagher? How it is that the present-day members of Parliament are so blind to history. I remember seeing a video of you, George, in the House of Parliament saying that it all started in this house. You probably remember that speech you made. But nobody says that. Nobody says that. Why? How is it that they are so ignorant and so blind to the message of history regarding the United Kingdom role in the problem that exists in Palestine today?
May I add one word? Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It was Burns night yesterday, the annual commemoration of the Scottish poet Robert Burns, who said, "There are none so blind as them that will not see." They're not actually blind.
neither are they ignorant. It's willful blindness and willful ignorance. Sorry, Father.
On the Irish point, I want to say that I have a favourite Irishman. His name is St. Patrick. And may St. Patrick bless us all.
Sister, there was a question.
Good evening. Actually, I want to say, because I'm from Iraq, we have no hope of any of Arab leader at all. Not previous, not recently, not in future. I don't think so. In Arab, we say, who creates the problem, he has to sort it out. So everybody knows, British create this problem and sold the land, they didn't have it, and they didn't own it. My question is to all of you, if there is any legal process internationally, we can like go for it to ask the British to do apologize and return what they sold because they didn't own it.
Okay, while the mic is coming to the next questioner from the floor, I'd like to add a few questions that have been passed to me on paper. One to George. Dear Mr. George, would you advise the Arab people and Muslims to support Islamic resistance in Lebanon and al-Hashd al-Shabi in Iraq, policy to oppose Zionist movement in Israel? The work against hypocrisy needs a lot of detailed knowledge. Could we establish a platform where we can bring organized and well-knowing and efficient work? Perhaps those people who are involved from the panel on the grassroots activism and organizations. Another one for George. How should activists who are in professional careers protect themselves against intimidation by Zionists? Question from the floor.
Assalamu alaikum. I have written the religious books of Jewish books that you don't believe in Israel as a political state, and there's some religious Jews who, especially the group Naturi Karta, that believe that Israel will vanish. What is more issues from your books that make this belief into true? I mean, is any more issues in your books, in your belief, that make this come into truth, this, that Israel will vanish?
The fact is that falsehood cannot last. The state of Israel is built on falsehood. Our teaching is that the Jewish people have no right to have a state of their own. They have to live as peaceful citizens in any country in which they find themselves and recognize the rights of the indigenous population. The fact is that one can see that the whole state of Israel only exists because of by being bolstered militarily by the United States and by themselves, and I don't think there's any state in the world that can only exist because it's surrounded by a military fortress and stopping anybody coming into them. I don't think there's any state in the world nowadays that is similar to that. So just coming back to that, falsehood cannot last. And because falsehood cannot last, it will come down. How long it will take, we don't know, but it's bound to come crashing down.
George, if you could answer the questions that are directed towards you.
Just prompt me, just while you're doing so, there is no legal process. If there were, we'd be following it. Israel has 4 times as many nuclear weapons as Britain, so Britain isn't going to fight Israel. Ours are public and legal, theirs are secret and illegal, but they have 220 nuclear warheads, which is very much more than we do. So don't look to us. In any case, it wasn't us. It wasn't the British people that gave Palestine away. It was Balfour who gave Palestine away. My mother, my grandmother, didn't even have a vote, never mind a say, in the British government when Balfour committed this crime.
that this crime was not committed by the British people. As a matter of fact, it was the only example in which, even in the history of imperialism, that one people gave away to a second people the land of a third people. Even by imperialist standards, that was a pretty ambitious thing to do. Britain didn't even possess Palestine when it gave it away to a group of people who did not represent the vast majority of international Jewry at that time. The vast majority of Jews in the world, when the Balfour Declaration was made, did not support Zionism, did not want to go and live in Palestine. If they wanted to come anywhere, it was here in the United States, and we closed our doors to them. And so you have to look to yourselves. You see, I was with, God rest his soul, I was with Arafat in China. He said to me, do you want to come to China with me? I said, yes. I had visions of the Great Wall and the Hall of the People and Tiananmen Square. And all. We flew all the way to China and had a meeting in the airport and flew back. And the Chinese leader said to Arafat, the Arabs are not serious about recovering Palestine. Because if they were, they could all just walk in and take it. There are not enough bullets to stop them. That time, the Arabs were 250 million. And the Israelis were fewer than 5 million, way fewer. And the Arabs could easily have taken it back if they had the courage to do so. And Arafat protested that point, but it's undeniably true. This is an Arab and Muslim task. And moreover, it's one that is entirely within their capabilities. When the late murdered king of Saudi Arabia placed an oil embargo for just weeks, it quadrupled the price of oil in Western countries and created economic carnage. It quadrupled the price, therefore, of a blank check support for Israel. That's why they murdered him. If the Arabs even called a meeting to discuss such a thing again, the oil price would rocket and economic chaos would ensue. There are almost 2 billion Muslims in the world. There are 350 million Arabs. They have to stop slaughtering each other in this fake Arab Spring and concentrate on their historic and religious obligation to free Al-Aqsa from the hands of foreigners. Did I miss any?
Would you advise Muslims to support Islamic resistance in Lebanon?
I support all resistance, but I don't like the question, so I inadvertently forgot it. I don't like the question because there's all kinds of resistance. Ahad Tamimi is a Sunni Muslim. Faris Odeh is a Sunni Muslim. The resistance is Sunni and Shia and Christian and Jewish in some rare cases. So I support all resistance to the Zionist state.
Can I just add something? As far as the legal recourse, it doesn't really exist vis-a-vis the British government. However much like the BDS movement, however much they try to criminalize it in America, it is a grassroots movement. They cannot stop people doing exactly what they want to do. And I can say, Tamim al-Barghouti once said, that if you have a million people in the streets and you confront those million people with 1,000 tanks, the million people, though unarmed, will be able to defeat the 1,000 tanks. So all we need is to pull all our resources together and stand in total solidarity. Numbers are everything in this.
George Galloway made a very good point a moment ago when he mentioned how King Faisal, Saudi Arabia, who was a very devout Muslim, shut down the oil supply to the West, and it caused a huge crisis. I remember I was new in London, I was a student. The offer was working in a bookshop, and we had to work by candlelight because we didn't get any other energy. However, That was before the Iranian Revolution. And today, as Roshan was mentioning earlier on, the way they're trying to divide Muslims is by driving a wedge between Sunnis and Shia to raising the bogus phantom, the specter of a Shia crescent, which is complete nonsense. And that one is what Muslims should resist.
Look, we really need to get our act together. If you're going to sit down and wait for sort of a court case to come and resolve this, or if you're thinking that we're going to wait for the British Parliament to resolve this, I remember, I don't know if George remembers, quite a few years ago, around 20 years ago, a delegation from Lebanon came, and I contacted George, who was at the Labour Party at the time, and he organized a meeting for them in the parliament. And the first thing he said, he actually welcomed them to this place. He said, welcome to this parliament from where we have actually oppressed people all around the world. And that is the fact. Let us wake up to this. The reality is that unless we become part of the resistance, we are not going to save Palestine. And we need to become part of that. And resistance is all Muslim, Christians, Jews, people of all faiths and none. And we need to come together. And this is what we should concentrate on. We don't want another 60, 70 years sitting on in a dream for a two-state solution or United Nations coming at the 11th hour as a cavalry to save the Palestinians. It will not happen. Let us stand up. And on that point, I want to sort of invite you, all of you, from now to organize for Al-Quds Day this year. We need to have thousands and thousands more people coming. We have already been told by the police regarding flags. Flags are legal. You could have them, no problem whatsoever. And everything is organized. Let us stand shoulder to shoulder, part of the resistance movement against the Zionist apartheid system, and we want one state solution and a state that everybody will live together happily, an end of apartheid in the same way that became end of apartheid in South Africa. And let us not forget one thing. The South African apartheid was removed because we supported the resistance, and resistance put pressure enough on the system to collapse. And that is the way forward. That's what we should be doing.
Okay, I would like to, there were a couple of other questions that I had, but I've been told the time is up and there is absolutely no way that I can stretch it any further. So apologies to those people that wrote the question, and if that question has not been presented here, apologies for that. I would like to thank the panelists from this morning and the first session and the second session for presenting their thoughts in such passionate and powerful ways. I would also like to thank the audience. I would like to thank everyone who has come today and those people that are watching online for having participated. The job does not finish here. It has started. It is another step, rather. And we need to remember there are many, many things to do and many, many different ways to organize that we need to continue to do. The resistance must go on. The party of God will be victorious. Assalamu alaikum.